Hello, Buggy fans. We are back with yet another season of Shoot the Shit. And if you can believe it, I can't believe it. We are in our fifth season of this podcast. That's right. If Shoot the Shit were a CMU student, it would be taking what we all know and love as its buggy year, the fifth year, and we are going as strong as ever in this fifth season. We got stories from all across the history of buggy, different topics, characters, all the stuff you've grown to know and love, bringing you the characters, the stories behind the scenes of this sport. So we appreciate you all tuning in once again, and get ready, buckle up your safety harnesses, because it is time to shoot the shit.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Will Weiner. I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. Sorry about that. I don't know. I had a really raspy voice today, and I thought that would be fun, and it was not. Anyways, the CMU TV race day broadcast has become an integral part of the sweepstakes experience, if I do say so myself. It allows students, alums, near and far to experience the totality of race day, see every single hill, replays, archive highlights that we can watch for years to come. But it was not always like that. You know, now we are very lucky to have a ton of effort and resources and make a near professional level sports telecast. Not to pat myself too much on the back, work of a lot of people, but when it started out, it was not quite like that. And this is that story of how that broadcast started, which I thought was a very, very fascinating listen, because it really was some members of a nascent CMU TV organization, a little bit of help from RCTW3VC, and students just going totally DIY and saying, you know, I think we can broadcast this, but, you know, running with cables onto the course, making bootleg switchers to go between camera to camera, low resolution. It involves TiVo. Do you remember TiVo? I thought this was a really fun episode. I think you are going to too. This is the story of how some CMU students pretty much bootstrapped together the broadcast of race day and how it got to the production that it is today. So enjoy as we shoot the shit.
Matt Tice. I was WRCT and 3VC was most of my buggy involvement, by way of AV Tech here and there.
All right. I'm Fred Hopke. I'm a 2001 graduate, and I was member of CIA and took also Radio Club. So I was buggy chair for Radio Club for a couple of years.
I'm Charlie Butkosk. I was head of class of 2003. I was head of CMU TV like 2000-ish to when I left 2003, and cadger in chief, of course, of everybody's labor design town.
And I'm Greg Battaglia. I'm the class of 2005, and I was a CMU TV president from 2003 to 2005.
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you, everyone, for being here today. I think something we're interested in is, like, now the broadcast CMU TV, it's gotten to kind of this point where it's, you know, they're bringing in outside production companies and it's this whole big to do. Obviously it was not necessarily that to start up. So I guess interested sort of, you know, whose idea was like, hey, we really should start broadcasting buggy, and just how did that initial prospect of like, hey, we should make this into a proper kind of like sports cast telecast?
Well, I'd like to go back even further than that, before CMU TV even existed. And for like three people on campus who would tune in, Jeff Hutzelman for a while was doing amateur television through the Radio Club. And he would set up he would have a camera person at the shoot, one at Panther, and, you know, one at the top of the hill, and they would do the little crappy amateur television signal up to Schlag, and put it out on campus, the campus broadcast. Again, I think it was like two people watched it and some people recorded it, but that was kind of around before I even got there.
Recording on extended play VHS.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was. High quality, I think it might have been, 8 pixels or something like that. Yeah, it was not exactly high res or high quality television, but it was the beginnings.
It might have even been an individual feed of each camera, and you had to basically switch channels between them. I'm trying to remember.
That wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense for how the cable infrastructure on campus was set up at that time. Sorry
Yeah, it
to.
wasn't even live switching. You just have to go next channel when it get down the hill, and
Yeah.
that's amazing.
That's definitely how it was carried across campus cable. There might have been a produced feed at the end of it, but I don't know.
I think they may have recorded all of them and somebody did it in post or something like that. But again, it was definitely homespun.
Yeah. What I always knew was Charlie, you were kind of the one who decided that we should move past that.
With Fred's alley-oop, I'm not gonna let him get out of here without a little bit of blame. No, we had been talking at CMUTV. So Shane Miner, my first year, was the one who actually like set up the organization, and so we had been talking about like it's like well so. Basically, like, how do you get a club prepared for like even doing like that broadcast? Especially now, looking at it with like some time, like with some like time in my now deeper past as a TV person, like professionally, like that's a huge that broadcast is insane. Like, it's a huge course. The angles are killer, and that's not
Right.
even getting into stuff. So we knew that we needed to build up to it eventually, but Fred, so I don't even think that first year we were gonna do anything. We was just gonna be like, oh, we'll do something in post, like the sort of reverse of the Bill O'Reilly. which I'm glad we didn't end up doing because it would have been a real pain in the butt, but to actually do that because we did that on Dancer's Symposium a couple years later. Yeah, so we knew we wanted to be there and like to do something because it was like obvious, right? Like, it's like the most televisable thing like at CMU that represents a lot gives a lot of people a chance to express themselves like Buggy specifically, but also sweepstakes in general in that like season on campus. Like, it's really where CMU is like the most what it like should be the rest of
Most
the
CMU.
time. Yeah, it is the homegrown sport, yes.
Yeah. But also, like, it's people doing weird stuff. Like, Robo Buggy, is that part of that too? Like, it's just all this like stuff that's weird people doing weird stuff. So I was actually, I think, talking to somebody about the plan to just like run time code lines across all of Schenley Hill to try this post strategy. And Fred, like, it was at like an AV Tech event, I think.
Yep.
And Fred like walked in and was like, hey, so what about like we've got these W3VC has these I don't even know what to call them now.
It was ATV. It was amateur
Yeah.
TV, but we had these video transponders that we could, send signals around the course. Again, low res, but at least be able to get signals around and do something.
Well, and when we say around the course, we mean you could do point to point over certain portions of the course. We had to set up different receivers for different parts of the course.
Yeah, you could do line of sight at Hammerschlag. Well, yes and no. I did also, that one of those years, I think it was in 01, I did do a mobile feed. So, we'll get to that in a bit.
That's the one I remember like selecting between as it moved.
Because that's the only one that functioned.
And I guess too, yeah, so this first year was or what year was it initially when this was kind of kicking off?
It was either 2000 or 01. I know on 01 we had the mobile feed. I couldn't remember if we did anything in 2000.
I think it was amateur TV in 2000 because I was there and that would have been 01.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, my first year was 01, and that's when y'all had the big truck with the hard cameras and whatnot, I believe, for the first time.
That's the question. Well, Fred records it in the Chronicle, in the Buggy Alumni Chronicle, as 2000, 2001 are still 3VC. Like, we're up in Hammerschlag. I'm losing my mind, like, trying to, like,
Wing it.
Wing it. And then 2002 was have to go big because it's just there's no like you can't like cowboy engineer your way across like those cable runs. So we called in a big truck, and then 2003 was like a big truck that actually like fit what we needed to do in a vendor partner that you know whatever. So that's what, so I can't remember if it's 2000 was the first year we tried. I can't remember if we tried if I like if we tried 2000 and 2001 or if it was just 2001 to do it in the like crow's nest at Hammerslag.
I think that was 2001 because I think I was running the TiVos in the finish line truck.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That would make a lot of sense. And I think the cable infrastructure that was on campus was part of the engineering strategy because the runs were just like punishing there were a few feeds that had been designated when they put in that coax internal like cable system that were designated as like, oh, well you can use these cables as back feeds for cameras. And I think they might have passed through some little op amps in there too to try to get you extra range or whatever. So, but Hammerslag was, it was like the one thing that being in Hammerslag was actually good for because we were close to a disconnect port. But yeah, it sounds, I think we must have only done it once because it was insane. It was like,
it was so, a mess. Yeah.
It was a lot. And you look at 2003 and the stuff, I mean, I have to say that I was very proud that I think we did air one or two things from the mobile truck when you were on it. Like it was actually like surprisingly like able to, you were able to use it a little bit. But yeah, it was rough going.
Well, and that was the mount you had designed for the trailer hitch, right? Was that was that year?
It was going to be, but that was a miserable failure. Okay, that was not exactly my strongest design thing. But yeah, we had this stupid 4-bar linkage we were trying to hook into the rear of the truck, and that was my senior design project. And we didn't tune the shocks properly, and it failed miserably. But, you know, in the end, I think I ended up sitting in the back of the truck with the camcorder to hold it in place to at least have something that we could try.
Yeah, and that was because I remember doing the receive. Maybe I was switching it before it got to you, Charlie. I was taking the feed from the lower receiver, like we had a receiver down on the finish truck, and that was able to get the starting hill. And then we had a second one. Maybe you were taking the feed directly from Schlag to get the second half of the course.
I think we put a receiver because we had scaffold up on the top of hill. So yes. I think we put a receiver at the top of the scaffold, and then the second one was on the tower in Hammerslag. Because you could get line of sight once you got down towards the Panther Hollow area.
Yeah, but we had wired feeds. Because I remember I had three TiVos that Jeff Hutzelman had hacked so that you could take video feeds in and do basically live playback.
And these are like the TiVo original DVR.
Oh, yeah.
TiVo. Yeah. Yeah, okay.
State-of-the-art TiVos.
I could run it back 10 minutes and replay that. And that's how we did instant playback that first year.
So just making sure I understand the tech, right? Essentially it was, right, especially in these first couple of years, you had the camera that was hooked to essentially like an amateur amateur radio, but TV style that would have to beam line of sight to Hammerslag, then using TiVos for playback and kind of live, switching between the angles and whatnot.
The switching was somewhere up at Hammerslag with you, but the playback was in the finish truck with me before it got sent up the hill. So you couldn't see the playback when I would cue it. I don't think. I think that was blind.
Yes, yes, that sounds very familiar. Because we only had one, even just the backhaul feed up. What are the hills behind the library? Up the final hills.
Yeah, the back hills. Yeah.
Even just that backhaul feed across the last three is it, like at, for the technology that we could bring to bear on the problem and the amount of kind of like, I don't know, like a sort of upper level support that we had at that point as an organization, CMUTV specifically, like that was like piggybacking on some weird cable TV things that they had put in, like the designs of all those buildings, just as like, well, what if the future is internet television and you teach on the television or whatever. like that stuff is what we were using to try to do those. And it, you know, it got surprisingly close. I mean, to the point about like switching, right? Like, we knew enough to not expect to use like Radio Shack style, like, you know, your like parents, like family room, like switch between A, B, C sources. But there were only so many like frame synchronized switches to be had on the rental market by the time we had decided in like maybe February that we were going to go ahead with this. So those eventually got pushed like further out. And so it was like Matt, somebody like Matt would have like a halfway decent setup, I hope, maybe. But at the end of the day, our master control switch was, it ended up being an ABC like Radio Shack switch. I remember that because I remember it just weirdly like the TV hated it. Like if you tried to see it on TV, it wasn't, it looked really bad, but the live stream actually worked surprisingly well. The, you know, the expectations were
the encoder dropped better. The frame issues, whereas the TV just like jumped every time you switched something.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even like, it was such a primitive live stream. It may have already had to like assume that you could go further than one or two, three frames out of sync. Whereas like what, as we discovered, like on other parts of the course, like even TV engineering, like, you know, big, you know, professional, like frame syncs only let you go so far out before you're in trouble. So yeah, that first year was very, it was actually, but it was good. Like if people got the spirit, like that's the hardest part, right? Is like just going from, I mean, Fred, that's a really good point that it's not nothing, right? Like, going from, which is even a little bit harder sometimes, like going from something to something better. That's certainly what happened in 2002. Is like, you know that you need to make the jump and like made a wrong decision or made like a wager that we didn't, that didn't work out. But yeah, like the spirit in that first year, I think among everybody, like everybody just having anything from around the course was like, so people were like looking at it now too, I'm like, people were like, the 3VC stuff in 2003 looks great. Like it looked relative to what we had working in 2001. It looks really great. But you look at it and you're like, people were really excited just to see this. And it's like, yes, very much so. Very much. It was like a real, it felt really good, I think, for everybody.
There was also a lot of, I mean, you were pulling from all over the place to try to get stuff. I remember going out to Versailles to an alumni's shop and getting a pneumatic personnel lift that we used for... Is that an antenna receive or a camera feed? I don't remember.
No, it was the antenna. Oh God, yeah, I remember that now. That was part of what we, you know, we used like a, you know, some little air compressor to stick it way up in the air so that we could get the antenna we needed.
Well, and when we say the finished truck, what we're actually talking about was his roll off box truck where it had one of the side panel kind of slid open, so you could literally park it on the curb. So we could see down over the finish line as opposed to being literally in the crowd.
Did we actually have that, or was it literally just a flatbed? I'm trying to remember. At one point, it used to be flatbeds.
No, I think maybe that was in 02 that we got Jerry. It was Jerry Verowick. And we lucked out in that Bruce Taylor was the telecom chief.
Yes.
Staff tele. And he was a W3VC alumni. So that might have contributed to why that cable TV system happened to have functioning back channels.
Yes, that would make a lot of sense. Bruce was very central in the effectuation of those things, for better or for worse, sometimes on my end. But yeah, that would make a lot of sense. He was very like thoughtful about the way he engineered things in that one.
Yeah. And that first year, did we use 3VC or WRCT as the audio, or was that later?
I want to say yes.
We went back and forth, I feel
like. We definitely did not have our own commentary.
Yeah, I think, yeah, Fred's right. I'm pretty sure that we just piggybacked on RCTs, in part because, like, you know, the engineering stuff that we've just been describing is, like, so daunting that you don't even have a chance necessarily, especially if you're, like, a brand new org. You don't have a chance necessarily to get to the like, you know, the important stuff of like the culture of buggy and like,
right,
getting like nice packages and still like nice sort of like,
well, yeah, just kind of all the context of the sport, especially. I mean, I know when I got into broadcasting it through, I was doing RCT and didn't know anything about Buggy, and like, it's not necessarily the friendliest culture to like people who don't know stuff about Buggy, which, you know, ended up working out okay. But I guess you were saying too, so was CMUTV like a pretty newly founded org at that point as well? Like, what else was TV doing at that point?
Anything a latchkey kid would envision, you know?
Right.
it was like peak late 90s kind of stuff, where it's like we would do so it started in CMUTV started in 99, maybe 2000, but they say on the website 99, so I'll go with their their copy. But yeah, it started in 99, and it was kind of a catch-all from the start. Like, Shane, who had been like the real start, like the person who had like sort of done a lot of the legwork to get it started from nothing, was a BHA guy, and kind of inhabited that spirit, like kind of just had this like roving intelligence that kind of wanted to go and express himself in different ways. So he had a lot of the stuff that we did when he was head was like about like kind of film stuff, kind of like doing like comedies and like short, like sort of 5 to 10 minute thing, like bits. And then we'd try to package it into like a weekly or something, some frequency news show that sometimes didn't go as well as the rest of the stuff. But so that was kind of it. Like, it was supposed to be sort of like a variety of stuff. Like, it was kind of like live productions when we could, like sort of cultural stuff, and then, yeah, news.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we got into it a little bit, but it seemed like, right, it was a pretty immediately huge impact on sweepstakes, just all of a sudden being able to see anything in real time. You know, but I guess what was it like working with sweepstakes or kind of the Buggy community, Buggy culture in those first couple years of integrating yourselves into race day or kind of other associated events, if there were any, or kind of ramping up to be a part of it?
I'd say W3VC and RCT had a huge part in kind of shepherding us into that a little bit.
Yeah, I think we helped. I will say the first year, I don't know that sweepstakes themselves was particularly excited.
I don't know if they were even aware. Like,
I might have forgotten to bring them fully along.
Oops.
Who is this on the course?
Well, I think that they might have basically vaguely, because 3VC had done amateur TV stuff, had done a couple of feeds here and there. Some of that was being used for safety playback,
right,
push bar violations, that type of thing. It kind of overlapped, is my recollection. So I'm not sure they realized how much it had ramped up that year compared to previous.
I think that's a very fair assessment. I remember when the mount failed miserably, I remember the chairwoman, bloody, I'm trying to remember her name, was not particularly excited about me hiding in the back of the truck there, but we made it work.
Which is interesting too, because I know pre all this, I've done one of these with the guys who, before it was even broadcast, would just sit in the back of the truck with a camcorder, and like that was used for replays, and then they'd kind of cobble it or whatever for race day capture. But yeah, I guess, right, so it kind of has started off, and it's this, you're cobbling it together however you can figure out with radio and pneumatic lifts and whatnot. I guess then kind of after this proof of concept in the early year, was that sort of where you got the support to kind of take it in this more professional, full-on broadcast level? Or what were sort of those lessons and that transition to getting a bit more serious and putting it all together?
I would say that part of the thing about being a new organization at a place like CMU is like you kind of have to really, really scramble to do a lot of things all at once. So you're scrambling on recruitment, you're scrambling on space, and you're scrambling on capital, and especially on for a place like CMUTV or a club like CMUTV, capital just goes so quick, especially in those days where like there's a lot of products that are like, oh, if you spend $10,000 on this camera, it'll be exactly what you need. It'll work exactly like a $100,000 camera. Never the case. So it just, that year we really got caught between like, kind of like, do you push for space and put things, you have to importantly like put things in the space, right? Like once you get it, so we push for space or thing and like sort of kind of like cameras and stuff to kind of get that kind of quotidian like cultural production going so that people are good at doing camera, people are good at doing editing, people are good at doing voiceovers. Like all those skills are, I think coming back to it now, especially they're really hard, right? Like yeah. You look at it and you're like, oh yeah, like how do you get your like interview subject to like self-present in a certain way and then also like take that, chop it up and make it true to what they said. It's a lot. So we decided basically that like the only way to do this was going to be to do a like full production truck that would have the kind of like engineering capacity to deal with all that. So this is for the 2002. We just got started late enough that we weren't able to get somebody locally, which I think was the biggest, like Greg can speak to 2003 a little bit more specifically, but that next year I was really happy that we went with somebody from Pittsburgh because I think they understood a lot better what the ins and outs and the needs of the production were. We're especially like as a professional in or as a former professional in that like TV engineering field, like I look at that stuff now and I'm like, oh, it takes a really particular kind of vendor to want to work with a bunch of upstart
right
kids who want to televise their like weird sport that like, what are these weird engineers getting up to? So,
and it's a hard production. Like you're yes. setting up catenaries over public roads that you can't truly close for the whole event.
Even just sighting the truck, like one of the things about that first year was just figuring out that you couldn't sight it at the old gym because it would just be for that very reason, Matt, that you're just stuck in like approvals hell where you're trying to cross a road, or God forbid you like decide you're gonna do it, but then you're gonna what, like strike it between the days or something. Like it's a lot. It's as a TV production, it's extremely challenging. So looking at it now, I'm definitely like, haha, there's a lot to take on. So we got enough budget. It was basically like the curse of that which exists, right? Like we had done it the previous, from the perspective of the student government at the time, we had done it the last year on like almost no budget, or like very limited rental budget. So why can't you do it again this year? And so the all-in cost for the one production, or for what we had kind of like expect to add up to, ended up being this the amount of one day for this other truck, for this truck from elsewhere in Pennsylvania, still a Pennsylvania company. But, so that was the wager: is the if you could only get one day, do you do it the first day? Do you do it the second day? If you do it the first day, you miss the finals, and that's your best TV for sure. If you do it the second day, you have a chance of getting the finals. But if you, as what happened in that year, if they only roll the year before or the day before, you're sitting there at a 4 a.m. call waiting
for oh God, the road just with to weather drive. Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was clear. It was like, so, it was so tragic too. Cause like, it was clear from the kind of moment that we were looking in that the weather was not going to be cooperative. And the engineers were, a little myth about it, shall I say. So that was definitely the learn of like, oh, okay. So this is, you learned to go. That was one of the reasons to go with somebody from Pittsburgh.
Gotcha. So you mean the professional engineers with the truck are like, yeah, what the hell are we doing here at 5 a.m.? Not even going to put on a production. Yeah,
like they could kind of understand what it was. Like it's also very abstract, especially in that moment, because there's no good recordings of it, right? Like, so it's really difficult to explain to somebody, here's what it looks like, you see that, do that. Even from the like, you know, the 2001 video, like you wouldn't have been able to really do that. So yeah, so they were, you know, like, you need those engineers. Now I'm like, at the time I was like, you don't even need those engineers. You definitely did, like, we definitely would have, and did, but they were, yeah, a little miffed. I remember it was the, you know, the, when they drive, when you like drive the course to try to dry it out. So they had like literally done like, you know, they're like, they were like a 24-foot like production truck or something, probably bigger than that. Yeah, it must be bigger than that because it was a semi. Anyway, so they, you know, they did NASCAR, like they do, like, you know, right. These trucks are at now. So seeing people like do that when they're like, oh, well, you need to drive like, you know, four times as fast to get that to dry or something. So I just remembered this. I just had this moment of like, it was like my one of my lowest moments as head of CMU-TV, and but continued the good, I think, a good tradition of like, when you're in your final year, it's probably not best for you to be at the head of it on that live production because it is a grueling like marathon. So I wouldn't have called it that then, but a little bit of self-care in that, because even just looking at some of the videos from 2003 2004, like remembering that you would load in even that year where it failed, which is such a bummer, like you load in at 4 a.m, you load at 3:30 in the morning. And you're hauling the grossest, heaviest, stupid cables on the planet. And so it was a real bummer that year that we worked so hard to get that done, but didn't have anything production wise to show for it. I think we learned a lot as an organization, and you know, it's a little bit I've had managers who tried to do this and resented it on the on the receiving end or whatever, but you know, you kind of drive the organization to it till it fails, and somebody will be your savior to a certain extent. So in terms of funding, like it was like, all right, well, if we only have one day, we're just going to do it well on the one day. It didn't work out. If you want the other day, I know exactly what the price of it is. If I have one regret, it's only not having set it up to do the first day so that if you need to do the second day, you can hold the gun to somebody to like, not hold the gun to somebody. So you can put somebody's feet to the fire and say like, listen, we have this truck there. So if you get rained out on the first day, you can say like, listen, we have this truck. All you have to do is, you know, find, especially at the CMU scale, like nothing, right, to get that thing up. So a lot of learnings.
Not yet. Yeah, I suppose as is the case with these things. And I mean, I guess then the next year we're able to get full funding for both days, somehow convincing them of like, hey, well, it's better than nothing. Or like, how did that go after it was kind of such a like, hey, we gave you this money for something new and then we got jack shit from it, like
in fairness to everybody on student that was not there, like nobody except for the engineers on the truck and a few people in other clubs, like nobody really gave us any like crap for it, because everybody knows exactly. I think in part like it's something that is not super common at CMU, but everybody has had that experience of just like total egg on your face failure. So I think a lot of people were pretty good about it. I mean, a big part of it was actually Greg, like because that next year, like the success of it, because a lot of what we were getting from student government that first year, you know, it's like late 90s, early aughts, like super like sort of libertarian insanity where you're like, well, did you try a market-based solution? So they, you know, they thought that there was a really big opportunity to do sponsorships. It's of course like, it's a classic, like even in the size of like, even in like the size, scope and scale of like a large TV production, you're like, of course you think sponsorships will just like appear. All you have to do is ask, like just ask. So that next year, a big part of getting the funding was having a like pretty active somebody out there who was Greg in that case, in that year, like just pounding the pavement and saying like, hey, do you want to sponsor us? Do you want to give us like t-shirts or pizza or whatever? Like do something to show, like even if the amounts coming in are nothing, like even if the amounts had been nothing, showing those bona fides was like a big part of it. And getting on the production trucks, like schedule, like getting the local company that had a truck that was scaled out and wanted to do it because they're a Pittsburgh company. And because if they could say like, well, we do buggy, like it's like actually like a nice, like they want to be there and they want to
right.
sort of do this learning stuff. So,
yeah, I mean, for those sponsors, was that like other people on campus, or were you having to go out to like businesses and like companies and alums and stuff like that to get that money to hustle it up?
Well, that's more Greg.
Or yeah, sorry, look and try and look down towards Greg on that one.
Yeah, no.
You know, I think we went after anybody and everybody. And I think the notion was, hey, if we can drum up some energy, if we can show that, you know, there's human interest and there's student interest and there's community interest, then you start to build that momentum. And like Charlie said, you know, connecting with Viewpoint, and these were the days of Jim Artsberger and Ron Masong and a bunch of other gentlemen. You know, that was the first time they had come across from, you know, shooting at Star Lake Amphitheater and, you know, the Chevy Pavilion and the places where Viewpoint, you know, normally worked with full-time employees to working with us kids, right? And a motivated group of students who were willing to get up at 3 a.m. and show up. And like Charlie said, I mean, the course isn't conducive to pulling television cable, right? Just to get from the truck to the backside of the course, you have to figure out how to get over the road, right? Or under the road or through the road in some way. So I think they joined in that sort of engineering type mindset with us to try and think about how do you do this in a way that isn't astronomically expensive, but they can make the experience feel really professional.
Right. How do you get the cable across the road? I'm trying to picture now where it is. So go across like the trellis?
I think we went over the finish line.
Yeah.
As a trellis. And then ultimately we put a camera on that trellis as well, facing down, so that you could see, see if the hands are on the bar as you're coming through. But yeah, almost everything had to run across there and then branch through the woods and over the hill.
It might have been from the truck, the borrowed truck, to like a tree that second year.
Oh yeah,
to get across. I don't know. I don't think that trellis showed up until a few years in.
Yeah, I definitely remember there being. Yeah, I can't remember which year it was, but I definitely remember there being like a. Oh, I think the camera fell. Like somebody needs to go within the tree or whatever. Yeah. So, but that's part of the challenge, right? Is like you don't even know. Like at the beginning, like we didn't even know. Like when we first started doing the truck, like I mentioned, the 2002. Like, well, we learned that not to put it by the old gym at the top of Tech Street. That was a good thing to learn. Like even just where to put it, like so that you could do like the annoying muddy cable run across the top of Shenley is a big challenge.
Well, and you're trying to partner with everyone. I remember 3VC and CMU TV shared a scaffold the one year.
Yeah, scaffold,
and
yep.
We discovered that when the 3VC operator like went to write something down, the camera view shaked. So the next year we had to get two separate physically isolated sections of scaffold so that when one person moved, it didn't shake the whole feed on the other one. And like you're trying to conserve and make it all work, but then you discover, oh, that made that shot almost half useless.
Scaffold wasn't cheap either. I remember that. it's shocking how much the little things added up when you start to put it all together.
Yeah, at that point, do you remember ballpark? Like, what was it? You know, the broadcast would have cost there in 03.
Oof, that's rough. I can't.
Yeah, I would guess maybe 30,000, somewhere in that range. Does that sound about right, Charlie?
I was going to guess 100.
Even more? Okay.
Because you wouldn't be able to get, I was just trying to compare it to the previous year, and I'm like the number that stuck in my head was 25,000 from that year. So if you add it up to, if you do 25, 25, you're at 50. Yes. You add a little bit of, you sprinkle a little bit of engineer's time on top. Camera stuff, because like that same crew was like so annoyed because there was rain. You just add on little things, because like the rain means you have to bring up like a camera bonnet. The like cold mornings to the hot afternoons mean a whole other. So yeah, I think once you started to add in all the extras and like extra engineer hours, because like, you know, students will put in 10, 12, 15 hours, but I looked at the production scale this morning and was like, oh, I would I would not be doing that. You know, like, you need to, like, it's a lot. So if you have a professional engineer who's clocking in, it's a lot. So it must be 100,000.
I know this was a problem we ran into with tech, would be, could you get access to the parking spot the day before or the rental of the truck the day before? And how is that structured for it? Like, once you've done it a year or two, they're like, oh yeah, if we just break the day up, like, we're not doing any gig the night before, we'll just park the truck on Thursday evening. But if it's got to roll in on Friday morning at 3 a.m., you're paying that CDL driver over time. And
I was looking through my emails and saw that we started Thursday morning with scaffold build, 8:30 a.m. And the truck arrived. This is 05, so this is a little later, but the truck came Thursday and started from that time through, you know, Sunday at 5 o'clock, where it ends with 5 p.m. pass out. And that's what it felt like between Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And you're right, Charlie, 4 a.m. call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was serious.
And then you've got a parallel effort going on over at WRCT to get, like, the audio side of it up and running. And how do we do those handoffs when they're not up and running until a half hour before the production? And the professionals are going, how could we not have sound checked this thing with a totally unknown feed being provided by a total third party?
Yes. I mean, I've always been amazed that AB, in retrospect, I've been amazed at the partnerships that AB Tech had with vendors when I was there. For that reason, that, like, get asking, you know, I remember, you know, like, a really basic issue of, like, graphics, right? Because, like, graphics every year were the problem, because the graphics format that the TV station or the TV truck is going to use and the, like, the whole hardware of it is completely different. And so asking, like, the truck engineer to, like, show somebody how to do basic, like, you know, Chiron compositing, because we don't know. So that, like, it's like a classic sort of, like that is why I describe myself as Cadger in chief from that time, is, like, so much of that is, like, trying to find, like, seeing really and meeting, like, so many, like, super talented people on campus, right? And, like, trying to find them and convince them to do something that's really hard and probably going to be, like, well outside of their comfort zone, and just trusting them to do it. Like, that's the whole job to a certain extent. It can be a lot. And grueling, to Greg's point, like, those are long calls. Those are, like, day and a half calls if you're a career person. So that's a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the kind of cool unsung things about, you know, the whole broadcast TV and RCT included, right? That has always been interesting to me, where I have a pretty easy job. I get to just show up and talk and some various amount of hungover or not, but, like, right, the fact so many people are out there running cable at 4 a.m 3 a.m whatever it is, and beyond that, like, they're not buggy people a lot of the time, like, probably don't care that much about the race and, like, obviously enjoy the production or whatever, but, like, do you care that much about radio or TV production to want to be doing that on your carnival weekend at, you know, 3 or 4 a.m. is something to me that's always just been very appreciated, but, like, unsung and just, like, impressive of, like, why is this working out, like, for us or whatever, to kind of, you know, serve the whole buggy monolith.
Well, it's a tiny team of people. Like, on RCT, it would be three of us. Because after that first year, I was never a CMU TV person. I went WRCT, was most of my buggy involvement, a little bit of 3VC here and there, mostly during free rolls. But my time was entirely sucked into broadcast on race day. But okay, we're buying a set of speakers and optimizing them around the one day a year where I set them up on what's the lower building? It would have been Porter, and on the steps on the top of Porter, and specifically picking a speaker brand because it had a better throw to try to be able to hear it and shoot. Because before the Jumbotrons, that we were covering Shoot from the audience in Shoot was hearing what was going on and when the starting gun was from those speakers up on the stairs, and getting into the building to try to find an outlet, and hoping a professor left the room open at 5 in the morning. And then I remember when I tried to transition off chief engineer, the guy who had to drive the truck had never driven a box truck before and gets to the U-Haul and they're like, yeah, the 15 foot you ordered isn't available. Here's a 32.
Oh, God.
And tech had an emergency where the 26 and the 16 we ordered weren't working out. So we ended up just doing a swap, like literally driving up in the middle of the road and drivers get out and swap. And tech drove RCT's truck that entire weekend and RCT tech's truck because they were able to get the 15 footer that would physically fit at in front of, not in front of the gym. It would have been on the other side in front of GSIA, I guess. So you're trying to transfer that knowledge to two or three people, to run that and get that set up, cables that are run up the hill because you were optimizing around delay. We had a delay on our main transmit for RCT that we had to take out for buggy so that you didn't have like a 3 second delay on the starting gun, for when people heard it on the other end to try to keep that optimized because you were basically doing a live broadcast piped over a broadcast radio station, in order to distribute it around the course, like using an FM tuner in order to pick it up at other locations. And it was some interesting engineering problems you got into every now and then of how do I get this around? How do I make sure that CMU infrastructure remembers the fiber pair that was set aside for us when you only need it 1 day a year, 2 days a year? Then no one borrowed that from you.
Being head of a club's tough. That cultural stuff it's really tough. Like, it's tough to figure out how to stick it in a place that won't get eroded within even like 4 years, let alone 10, 20 years. Like, it's.
Well, and honestly, from the outside, it was impressive that, I mean, CMU TV was so new, and then you're trying to transition stuff that you only sort of figured out the year before. At RCT, I had I can go find this person who did it 5 years ago and ask him, do you have any clue where that connection was? And I'd get a few at least vague answers. Whereas you guys are trying. I remember sitting in a meeting with you and Bruce, trying to figure out how to get audio around and like just spitballing where it is. Like, okay, well, we can do a hop from here to here, and then we can go out through broadcast and come back over here. And that, how do we get stuff across that? Those darn streets.
Oh man, so many. Really coming back to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say that's, the difficulty is that the sweet spot for a lot of people or the sweetness in the practice is about doing the cultural things. Like, it's about, you know, being a really, like, we had a couple people who were just camera people, and they would just show like. They would only show up that day. I could never get them to show up for a call at any other time, but I didn't have to ask it. I didn't have to say anything. So you have these, like, there are these huge engineering challenges, and it's all just to get past, like, it's really just to get to the, like, you know, to the meat of the practice to a certain extent. And you want, because you have all these people who you want to be able to like do their thing. Cause they're crazy brilliant.
Right. But I guess too, kind of to that thing, like you talking about the cultural thing, like, did you find it difficult both from an RC2 or a CMU TV side to get the kind of people to execute on the day of, because maybe buggy was less of a thing, or did people see it as like, oh, this is a cool opportunity because it actually is a big broadcast?
A bit of both. On the engineering side, I feel like that was in some ways easier. People to show up and, oh, this is the time we get to do the big setup. We get to play with the big truck. We actually lay out all the stuff for the radio station. The in front of the camera, I felt like almost was harder in a lot of cases. And I was very much more on the technical side of things. But okay, I've got this set up, and then I hand it over to a guy who's been doing basketball broadcast and maybe came out to free rolls once. We convinced them to come out for the last half hour, maybe truck weekend. And then, okay, now you're going to use all of this equipment that's totally different than anything you've ever touched before to try to produce a product. And people forget just how hard talking on air and filling all that time is. And it's the, oh, why do you keep playing that random music? And it's like, because these guys have been up since 5 a.m. talking. And like, there's a reason the football commentators have a pregame team that's totally different than the game team versus the post. And Bucky's a long day.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely can speak to that. It's one of, and not that the technical side isn't very difficult, but one of the weirdest broadcasts I'd ever had to do. Like, even CMU football was tough in the sense that, right, you don't have timeouts. So it is whatever, an hour, 15 minutes nonstop talking about football. But Buggy is, depending on how you'll take a break, if you do or don't, almost like 5 hours nonstop of broadcast with some amount of stuff to react to. But just keeping your brain firing for that long, trying to be coherent. And, you know, kind of the interesting thing too, right? It is a radio broadcast. It's television play-by-play, and you're working the live crowd all in the same feed. And those are three very different demographics and like broadcast styles that you would necessarily do, right? If you were just calling it for radio, you wouldn't call it the same way as just for TV. And you kind of got to figure out a happy medium between all three of them or whatever. I think it, now I'm just rambling, but like, has helped in some, or it, I guess stepping back, it was weird, right? I was that guy who did CMU football and basketball, and they're like, you're doing Buggy now. I was like, what the hell is this? And it was not good. And I think they don't really do play-by-play at RCT anymore, so there haven't been student play-by-play people coming in. So it's like, after a decade now, it's like, okay, I know how to call Buggy. Great. But like, it really took that amount of time, and it is kind of this weird balance, right, between you want to give people opportunities and keep kind of the amateur spirit alive versus you're spending, you know, $100,000 on a production truck. Like, let's put together a good broadcast. And I don't fully know where the right balance is there.
Plus, it's supposed to be fun, you know, like, I have a lot of trouble remembering, or had a lot of trouble in those days remembering that. But you're working with volunteers. I mean, Matt touched on it a little bit. Like, you're working with volunteers, like, and they're in it for reasons that have nothing to do with the reasons that you're in it for, right? Like, so it's definitely a balance.
And you're pulling from a small client pool, a talent pool. Like, oh, if I pull a person in to do RCT and broadcast, that's one less person that Charlie can steal for CMU TV, or that Fred is going to steal for safety broadcast, or safe, not broadcast, safety on 3VC.
Well, or even just AB Tech. I mean, you know, again, Carnival stretched all of us so much.
Yeah.
I mean, even outside of Buggy, we all had things we were doing just to keep ourselves entertained.
Wait, you had time to go to Carnival? That's impressive.
I didn't say I went to Carnival. I said I went to the AB Tech setup and helped over there. I mean, let's be clear about this. Sleep is overrated.
I think I made it to the Margaret Morrison parking lot one time in 4 years because we were just too busy.
Yeah, I don't think I ever stepped into a booth when I was a student, like between stuff or whatever. It's just,
I mean, I think that's some of the reason the alumni come back was,
right,
oh, I can just not show up for broadcast. Like, I don't have to be here at 5 a.m. for broadcast. I can just walk in the first hour of rolls. And even if I'm helping out, it's, I can then go look at booth. I can go climb around in a booth and go, oh, does this feel safe? But everyone was so involved. I got my amateur license because Carla Geyser brought me to amateur testing thing, which was what got me involved in 3VC, which was what got me involved in the broadcast. 3 years later, she was assistant chair of sweepstakes. I was head of tech and chief engineer of WRCT. Just trying to beg, borrow, and steal people back and forth was always
right.
half of the battle. But you learned a lot about motivating people and how to, like, managing when you don't have a paycheck as, like, the counter offer. You have to actually learn to pay attention to people's motivations and why they're there and how do you work with that. And, like, totally screwed it up sometimes, but I learned a lot about how to do that and how to motivate people and what it takes to run an event. Like I do that now for my day job, deal with large scale events and just understanding more of the background of how these things and how many different players can be involved. When we bring new people in and they don't have that breath, it's hard to train people. And okay, this is how 100, or I mean, it's a 5,000 person event in a 10,000 person community. So it's like half of the community,
right?
Versus doing something in a major city where it's a 100,000 person event in a million person city. But you learn a lot of those basic, how do you tie that all together? What is involved? What do you need to make this happen? Feeding people is actually hard when you're doing a 4 a.m. to 6 p.m. call.
It's where the free pizza donations came in, Fred. That era, Matt.
Well, the one sponsorship that worked, right?
I remember that.
Heck yeah.
At the same time, it is shocking how effective feeding people is as a motivating factor, especially in college.
And having slightly better food than the other club.
Right. Cool. Are there things you think I maybe missed in terms of just kind of pulling all this chaos together or like what the story was of kind of how this broadcast came to be and the challenges and so on and so forth?
I guess so. I feel like there's definitely a ton of people who we have not mentioned, like, especially on the content side, like, because each of those years, so just to say, like, not to mention anybody specifically, but each of those years, like, you know, as we were struggling with the engineering side, like there were a ton of people who were on camera struggling with situations that nobody should ever be asked to deal with. So yeah, just like that, there were a ton of people out there on the course who were doing really incredible work those first 2 years, especially where it didn't necessarily get to see the audience that it should have. But it was pretty impressive to see them all do their thing amazingly. And just to say also, actually, as Matt was describing that, was sort of describing the differences of running a sort of club. You know, it's also different, like getting a group of people who are interested in something like Buggy because it's interesting and a weird CMU thing is just not something that you experience elsewhere in your professional life. Like you just don't, like, because you're at the baseball game to show the baseball game or whatever, and it's just very different running that. Like, you can feel how much of more of a labor of love it is when you're like when you have to be the student who's pulling that all together just because you know it's going to be amazing.
Right. Any maybe even just like stories or anecdotes or moments of crisis or chaos that potentially came to mind when. You know, the topic of this episode came up that we maybe didn't get to.
Nobody pressed me on 2002, so that was after.
I remember, Charlie, you recruiting me in for that, right? Because it was
how did that go?
You know, I remember there being weekly CMU TV meetings. I don't think CMU TV even had more than a closet, sort of as a home space. Does that sound right, Charlie, back then?
Yeah, I don't think we had we eventually got one in the UC, but I don't that first year. I think we were there. May have been you're being very generous describing whatever we had as a closet.
Yeah. there were some cameras, there were some passionate folk, and you heard about it through the ethos because it was so early in the days of the club. And then I remember you calling and saying, hey, we're going to get, you know, these wild cameras and this whole truck, and would you be willing to come out at some godforsaken hour and join all of us? And it was this tight-knit group of, you know, the folks you mentioned, Shane, yourself, Charlie, and others, who had been there since the beginning. And then sort of this new crew of folks who were showing up for the first time at 4 a.m, trying to figure out what to make of it. So, yeah, I just remember the disappointment of the rain and not being able to actually pull it all together after all that build.
Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure that we recruited you because it was like you had done TV stuff at Mount Laurel, right?
Or yeah, Mount Lebanon.
So like that was like, you know, like across, especially the East Coast, like there's all these like little schools that would have like pretty well developed TV programs. And so I don't know how you and I like ran into each other and like found that out. But yeah, like especially that year, the like countdown to the production year, I was like totally crazed. So it was definitely like you met me at a moment where it was like, oh my God, thank God Greg is here. This is too large a thing to at least for me, like to just take on yourself, especially like especially in 2002, like the disappointment, right? Like people work like their butts off for you. And so, yeah. So I was very happy that you said yes and sticked with it even after 2002.
Yeah, well, it's pretty cool that the momentum built from those years continues, right? Viewpoint is still doing the production 24 years later, yeah. 22 yeah. years later, right? I mean, it's crazy.
Is that true? Wow.
Yeah, it's still Viewpoint. Yeah, it is funny. They get it now. I mean, maybe they got it then, but it's kind of like, it definitely makes things easier working with them that like, this isn't the first time they've had to be on the hills. And like, I think they're a little more gracious dealing with us as broadcasters or whatever. Although I do think a couple years ago, they like switched the head producer and like, he was coming in like, you know, as if we had full knowledge of how to work on a running broadcast or whatever. It's like, I'm okay. But like the rest of these kids, like they have no idea. But yeah, still Viewpoint.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. I mean, that's the thing, right? Is like in looking at the new stuff, like I'm so happy. Like there's so much stuff that we were trying to do back in the day that we just never were going to get there. Like having like a stable, like graphic identity. That's like, so you don't have to like reinvent the stupid chyrons every single year or whatever. Like it's really, it's pretty great to see it all grown up.
Yeah. I mean, even in my, when I start 2010, so 14, 13 years now, just the amount of advancements between, I don't know if it's TV or Viewpoint or whoever, in terms of some of those capabilities with replay and getting the timing integrated and the graphics and all that, it's, you know, we could really fool people. It's a real broadcast, which is a nice feeling and definitely, you know, stems from the pain and challenges y'all had to go through way back when, or back when, maybe not way back.
And they seem to get it right from the start, right, Greg? Like, I remember, who's the guy in the truck, Jeff?
Jim Artsberger. He passed away, unfortunately, a couple of years ago. Yeah, but Ron is still working with Viewpoint.
But I remember he looked at that, you know, that insane 3VC amateur radio feed and was just like, oh, we got this. And just rolled up his sleeves. And, I, you know, 2003, you look at that footage and it is like, you know, it doesn't look like a TV signal should necessarily, but it's solid. It like it's useful. You can cut to it and it looks good. Like, so that takes somebody who really wants to be there and is excited to.
Well, I'm trying to remember, did that happen before? Wasn't that a BAA thing to bring that in?
Were you guys around when the Jumbotron started, or I don't remember when those showed up? That was much later.
Yeah, I think that was a 7, maybe It was. I know it was a big, it was before my time, but I've talked with someone about it at some point, or I dreamt it. But I think it was in the 06, 07 time frame, and they did a big fundraising push of like, this will take it to the next level if we can have the live Jumbotron. And so I know they really had to do a big push. I think they ended up getting the money from the university and then, or fundraising, and then they got it built into the budget eventually to be able to say like, hey, can we also staple another, what, like 30 grand or something on top of this for people to be able to see what's going on.
Does that change the spectator experience from, oh, I'll kind of hang out at shoot and see what's going on there, to, okay, I can actually see this whole thing, or everyone running up Flagstaff Hill every race to, okay, I'm going to try to see the finish line, or I'm going to see the start and then run down so I can be on the top, on the hill to see them come around shoot. Like when we, that first year, I don't think, did we have TVs around the course? I don't think you could see the broadcast. I think it was entirely on the campus cable feed and the stream.
That's correct.
That is incorrect. Okay. That is incorrect. There was one. What is that building that's right at the end of the chute?
Scaife.
Yeah, I guess. What was it?
Had the potato chip.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I'm reasonably certain, and I think it may have even been Bruce, been the influence of Bruce, who would like, it would be very like advisorly of him, which is often his role at that time, to like say like, don't you want to put a TV somewhere so that they can see it? But so he at least in the planning, or like at some point in the planning, Scaife was going to have a like an AV style, like little like TV that you would like, you know, like somebody would roll in and you watch like sports bloopers on rainy days. Like they put that in Scaife. And so I think that we had some kind of broad like bot, but it was very primitive. It was...
That actually sounds vaguely familiar. And then the fight between the people trying to listen to RCT and shoot from those speakers up on a Porter and the people trying to listen to the broadcast on the TV that was closer, but also kind of off to the side. I vaguely remember having to go turn that speaker, like someone pulling power on the speakers multiple times and having to run down there and turn that on. we hadn't quite figured out how to make those two play together at that point. Then we had to pack everything up the night and bring it up to Hammerslag Hall, lug it up the stairs to leave it for the night to redeploy it the next morning.
So many memories of finding ways into those buildings that probably nobody knew, but it's right. 1 a.m. and I have like too much to do here.
And I mean, that first year when we laid out the 3VC stuff, I remember rewiring it in, I had done TV in high school, and like, Jeff kind of put it all down as a single pieces of equipment. And I'm like, there's no way I'm going to actually be able to produce anything with this, and having to figure out the wiring from scratch at 5 a.m. Oof. On Friday. I don't think we got up and running with the broadcast until like an hour or two into buggy.
Yep.
Just because we were literally still running the wire. Because we had no idea how long that was going to take.
It worked in the end.
It's nice to go back and watch the Jumbotron and then not have to figure out, oh, well, okay, RCA to channel 3 modulated, and then we kick it up to, because it was running on the cable TV frequencies that don't show up on broadcast. We were using the broadcast or those channels to pump it back on the cable system as the back channels and then down modulating it to send it back out.
Yep.
So you had the same physical wire that was your transmit and receive feed to the, that might have been how I could see the actual product in the truck, was it was looping up to Charlie, he was switching it, and then it was coming back down to me, and maybe you had a preview, maybe you didn't, I don't remember.
We did not. We had one late in the day on that day. That's also why there's no recording, because we did not remember to have a deck available to make a archival, or what, not even archival, a recording at all.
Oh, shoot. I didn't realize that.
I definitely remember the modulating onto funky frequencies. I definitely remember, because I remember the other termination point was, because they had just redone all those halls, like the other termination point was whatever that building is at the corner of Tech. So yeah, I think you're right. I think you were sitting there with like a...
There was like a light post that you basically like unscrewed the side of, and there was like four wires that were just hanging out there that had been included in the plans that were necessary for the cable TV system somehow, that I mean, essentially allowed this to happen, because they'd just been baked into the requirements. And I'm sure it cost an extra $10 to run that when they did. But I mean, that was just the alumni support, having someone in administration that was like, yeah, let's just spend the extra $10. This will be useful. Like it creates that student creativity down the road. It's kind of amazing that we actually made that work.
No,
I wonder if Bruce has a VHS copy somewhere.
You know,
he might
just put it in on record.
Yeah.
Him or Jeff?
Jeff was more involved in getting the Hammerschlag Hall suite up and running, is my recollection. So I think he might have been a little more busy that day.
He may have been. You're right.
Although Bruce was running around too. I think Bruce was the one who drove in that borrowed truck.
He borrowed
the truck from Jerry Verowick. He drove it in and parked it there so that we had a rain covered spot to put all the electronics.
Yes, this is rain. Yes. Because you would have to steal, like, you know, you don't have a car. Like, how many kids have cars? Like, I mean, I guess a lot of kids maybe, but like, we didn't have it. Right. Only a few of us did. So it was like, you know, Bruce loaned a truck that had a cab over or something, and like, you went, like, the person that you like drove to the airport like a couple months ago, I like got a ride with somebody to like go out to Wilkinsburg and like pick up like 15 frame sinks, three of which were broken. Like, it was just like that is the other role of like cadger in chief, of like, what rides can I steal, what like favors can I exchange to get you in this like this errand with me.
Well, that was my freshman year. I think I had seen Buggy for at least an hour during sleeping bag weekend, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Like, so I had not, I mean, that was my freshman year. I had not seen this thing. So it's okay, you're going to shoot. If they're going to, like, I was the person you were describing. Okay, it's going to come up here, and then I need you to switch to this feed for down here. And maybe we set up the cameras the week before during truck weekend just to see if we had the range.
I think we had done tests on the broadcasts, but I don't think we'd done like, we definitely
not set up the whole rig.
We did not do the whole kit and caboodle. No.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But you know, like that's the other problem, right? Is like, in addition to just the tech, like the sort of like engineering part of it, like just being there to see, like, there's just a ton of labor and just being there every weekend to see what a roll's like and see what the course operates like. And it's a really, even at that level where you like look at it as a TV broadcast, like, it's really unforgiving, because that last turn has no good sight lines on it, or the shoot turn has no good sight lines on it, and it's fast. Like, if you could go straight down the one, you could be all right, but you'd still need other coverage angles. It's a lot. It's a really, sorry, I know now I'm back in it.
No, this is good stuff. It's because I think so many people kind of take the broadcast for granted at this point, but right, the amount of just kind of detail and challenges, I know at least for me, is like, holy shit, like, that would be really hard, actually. Like,
but there was also horse trading, and okay, we've got three cameras, where do we put them? Like, okay, we need to put something out by Panther, because otherwise we don't have that. But okay, you're now, are you whipping a camera around 100 and or 210 degrees in order? And what happens if one buggy's behind and one's not? Like the I guess now it's probably a little bit more dialed in, but it had only ever been like, okay, we'll get a little bit of this shot and a little bit of this one. It was for awareness more than anything else. You just do a wide shot and hope you catch it, but that doesn't work, especially SDTV. This was before HD. So you really had to be zoomed in if you wanted to see anything.
Well, and the shoot camera that we put scaffold in the shoot, and it was right off the sidewalk there, just on the one side of the bridge. So, you know, trying to get get any sort of coverage around that turn was not pretty.
And you don't know, right? Like, or at least I didn't know, like, how different, like, just setting angles and stuff, like, for professional, like, even when we had, like, the truck is, like, a, like, just getting the truck is one thing, but then, like, okay, well, now you got a truck there. How do you handle that? Like, the fact that you put the scaffolding at the top of Tech Street and your angle is super duper steep and you're not going to be able to get it unless you knock the person sitting on the scaffolding there with you. You know, you go from the top of Tech Street and then the next, your next shot that you need to pick up is Panther Hollow, right? Because you have a really limited coverage off of Tech Street down. And so you're relying hugely on this one camera that, oh, by the way, impossible to wire because you're surrounded on all sides by public thoroughfares. Definitely no line of sight to Hammerschlag. Forget that. So it's really like, it's a very, like, it's just a series of like, it's like a Fitzcarraldo like challenge, right? You're like, how are we going to get this little boat up here? I hope it's still seaworthy afterward. And it was every time except for 2002.
But that was also learning some of the where they go, right. Like getting that up and running. And okay, well, we're sitting here in the rain. I think you guys played with, okay, we're going to pretend there's a buggy coming around the course. Like, what are these swings?
Yeah, we covered, man, I wish we recorded that. Maybe there's a finding aid at the library with the CMUTV stuff in it. I've been terrified to go look at the contents. But I'd really be curious because, yeah, we did. That was why I remembered that the truck engineer being like, I'm not going to drive a course. Because, yeah, it was the perfect opportunity, especially for, like, you know, replay graphics, like all that stuff is technology that you never touch. And especially designers are operating in one like sense of the world, and designing graphics for TV is just a totally different beast, especially at that moment. So it was a great opportunity to just like play around that. and learn, like, because we knew that, like, that was actually why I remember the 2003, I think, Greg, you might have asked, like, at some point in that production, like, why we didn't do a larger truck. And part of it had been, like, that year, like, and part of it had been that 2002, like, parking a 30-foot semi is a real unique beast. And do you have tri-phase power and all this other stuff? Like, it gets, like, the sighting alone just of the stuff you need to get done is a huge, introduces its own constraints.
Sweet. Any final thoughts on, I don't know, where it was, where it's gotten to, or life lessons from Buggy or anything like that y'all want to share as we're wrapping up here?
I'm glad we did it. I'm glad we decided to be insane and go, what the hell? We're going to go make this happen. Because, you know, I haven't been able to get back for a few years because of the job, but, you know, being able to watch and see what it's become is amazing. And, you know, we were a part of that, and that feels great. I'm proud of what we pulled off. And as homespun as it was, I'm really proud of what we were able to accomplish and learn and turn it into something really cool.
Yeah, and it's been impressive how it evolved and changed. Like, we did that first year where it was, I mean, bare bones. Like getting all that stuff to work, and then the truck showing up that second year, and it's like, okay, this could actually work and not be as brutal as that first year had been, in that, okay, you've got feeds, the sink actually works, and like that learning, okay, we need to trust that. Maybe it was a third year that trust showed up over the, okay, we need to put, because I think we just hung a camera in the finished truck to get a side view of the thing. But okay, yeah, we really, having someone coming down that stretch, we just can't hit that angle from the top of hill one or two, I guess, or from the finished truck. Like, now they hang a camera on that truss shooting straight down the road. You saw that evolve. And then, I mean, it was impressive that as much of a force of nature as Charlie was, turning that, like, it did transition, like Greg and your era did keep that going. And I was kind of seeing this from the outside on the RCT side of, I'm just going to hand you a feed and argue with you for a half hour over who's causing the buzz.
It was RCT, just to, no, I'm kidding.
Probably. I mean, RCT was trying to ramshackle stuff with old AB Tech speakers that every year I'd pull out and people go, whoa, those still work? And leave them sitting down at the beginning of the hill and running into, well, maybe we shouldn't be using that particular microphone wire because at a 200 feet next to a transmit path, there's some buzz happening. And I mean, like all those different interaction stuff we learned, but how that transitioned to new students and like, I mean, building RCT, 3DC had been there 90 years, 100 years at that point. Mm-hmm. RCT was 30 years old and you guys were trying to build something from, I hadn't even realized, I don't think, that it was only a year or two old. I had kind of gotten the, it's 3 or 4 years. They've kind of been doing a production every now and then. I don't think until now I had realized it was that new.
Oh yeah, we were running on vegan cookies and hope and a dream.
I remember passing, it was probably like a year or two after that, like finishing truck weekend, walking over, like someone was like, you really look like you need to eat, and dragged me over to the CIA breakfast. And Catherine, who I think was on a previous podcast, like handed me, like literally handed me pancakes that I held like as a sandwich as I walked down the road to a tech event. I was like, you really should eat something before you go to the next thing. Those 2 weeks, truck weekend and buggy weekend, were always a bit of a blur.
Yeah. I mean, just to echo what Fred and Matt said, especially Fred, I mean, when we were thinking of this and or talking about this in Rangos Hall or whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of the stuff that they do regularly now is stuff that I think we could only hope might be a spot where it could get to. Like, definitely, I remember there was definitely a moment of like, could we get replay? Wouldn't that be like amazing? I feel heartened that, Fred, we got replay. What can
I say? Hey, you know, it was an amazing thing. It really was. So,
I don't think you told the freshmen that was a new thing at that point. Yeah, I think I didn't know that replay hadn't been something you had done, so I was just trying to figure out how to get it to work that year.
Oh, you gotta fake it till you make it, man.
High bar to trip over, that's for sure. No, it's great.
And that's the other thing I would say, actually, is apologies to Greg, apologies to everybody who I asked to jump over, you know, multi-story buildings. And who often succeeded in doing so with no right from our from the support that we gave them. So yeah, thanks to everybody who was on those productions that put in a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get this happening.
It certainly took a village, and it's really fun here 20 years later to reconnect with you three and to think back to those times. And amazing to think that all of that has resulted in something that continues to run year over year over year. I don't think many volunteer gigs can quite quote that with such longevity. So it's pretty cool to reflect on.
No, for sure. I mean, grateful to, all of you for making it possible, and can draw a pretty direct line from, you know, what you did making the broadcast happen to the fact even we're here on this podcast or whatever kind of spun out of it. But I do always think it's such a cool thing about this gig or whatever that, right, 20 some odd years later, people are able to recall so many of the details about, right, these harrowing volunteer experiences or whatever we all had, but like are excited to come back and talk about it and relive it. So, you know, I personally am grateful, but, you know, on behalf of Buggy or whatever, it's pretty awesome where the broadcast has gotten to these days. Hope you all enjoyed that one. That sort of thing is very interesting to me, but I think just kind of one of those cool pieces of Buggy lore that, you know, so many aspects of this sport we kind of take for granted now, and always cool to just hear how much work and energy and effort and crazy times were required to establish some of these things that now are just traditions and, you know, run pretty smoothly. But don't just take my word for it. We love to hear your feedback here on Shoot the Shit. If you go into our Discord, cmubuggy.org/chat, there's a podcast channel there. You can let us know your thoughts about this episode, ask questions, suggestions for future topics, anything you really like there. So definitely love to get that feedback. We have a really fun episode coming next week. We talk with the creators of the infamous bathtub buggy from the late 70s. It is one of the most unique episodes I think I have ever recorded with this. This kind of wild, just hippie punk rock spirit and a fascinating approach to buggy through parody and high art. And I don't know, you'll like it. So definitely tune in. Want to give a big thank you, as always, to Rachel Schmidt for producing this, editing it, getting it all together, making my job super easy. So thank you to her. Thank you to the rest of CMU Buggy Alumni Association. And join us again next Wednesday for another episode of Shoot the Shit.